You are listening to Around Comics, episode 235, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here, and we are back at Dark Tower Comics.
We are.
After our couple weeks away there, I want to thank Patrick and Dal over at Challengers for
being
such
good chamber.
That's the big empty room.
It had a carpet in it, a rug.
Did it?
Yeah, right in the center.
Yeah. I don't remember. We weren't on the rug.
We weren't allowed.
Yeah.
Eric Larson was allowed on the rug.
That's right. I thought it was his rug. I thought he had brought that with
he brought
him.
Yeah, he's his peculiar rug. He needs his rug.
Shipped it ahead.
Have my rug out, all right.
But no, we would like to thank Patrick and Dal for hosting us. But it's always good to be back home at Dark Tower. Let me get you introduced to these other two guys. You already know them by now. Mr. Tom Caters.
Hey.
Mr. Brian familiar. Salazar.
Same thing.
L'chaim.
L'chaim?
I don't know.
Does that mean hello? L'chaim. Does it?
I don't know.
Hola. ¿Cómo está?
I have no idea. I'll have to ask David.
Oh, I gewalt.
I don't even know why I said
that. I wish.
I think it means like cheers, maybe.
Cheers. Mazel tov.
Mazel tov.
It's like congratulations.
Well, I tell you, what's we've got a lot of
Yiddish today.
Welcome to Around Yiddish. We've got a lot of Around Comics to talk about, so let's get into that here in just a second. But first, I want to remind you that this episode, as always, is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free. And right now our book club we've got dogs
going everywhere.
It's like a kennel up in here. Hi Daisy. Right now our book club selection, which was hand selected by Mr. Brian Salazar here, is the Saga of the Swamp Thing hardcover volume 1.
Why did I pick that?
And because it's awesome.
Oh,
it's good stuff. And it is good stuff at a great price, because right now In Stock Trades has that discounted phenomenal 47% off the cover.
Whoa,
price.
That's phenomenal.
It's only $13.24.
Skin crawl.
Is Jim Rome gone? Is he officially?
No, he's everywhere.
Around, yeah.
He's still in the sports world.
But anyway, Saga of the Swamp Thing. I think it normally retails for $24.99, and you can get it at In Stock for $13.24. And that collects Saga of the Swamp Thing issues 20 through 27. So
why hasn't a comic book store used the tagline making it harder to wait for the trade?
we'll make it harder for you to wait for the trade.
That's a free idea.
I don't think they want to make anything harder necessarily, but
according to some people, Dan DiDio has said that.
Well, you know.
Are you sure they don't want to make it harder?
I think I don't think most comic book stores really think that far ahead about any subject.
Tom's Attic. Just please buy something.
I think that's pretty much how they operate.
Please buy something. But not, what you're buying is garbage.
Yeah.
Welcome to Tom's.
It's not worth anything. You'll put it away, and then eventually you'll think it's worth something.
Your books suck.
Somebody will throw them out. Yeah. Everything you read
sucks. The books you buy are garbage.
Oh, I've been forgetting to mention who the featured music artist is each week. I've just kind of been throwing it in there and saying in the show notes. But this one actually, per Sal's request, is music featuring the Ultra Lounge collection.
The Ultra Lounge!
So we got some lounge music this week.
Yeah, I finally found something in Chris's library that I...
What shocked me? I thought you were just messing with me.
No, I dig lounge music. Yeah, like I told you, it's like I watch like Mad Men, which is set in like, you know, the the 50s.
When men were men.
Yeah, and that's when I, you know, it's like, yeah, that would have been cool to, you know, to be back then. But no, unfortunately.
We live now.
I'm now in this lame-ass 2000.
She found something in all of Chris's Reba McEntire bootlegs.
It was tough. It was hard to
get. I've been Lilith Fair bootlegs.
To be fair, it's his wife's stuff. And that's probably.
It was part of stuff. Yeah. I've been listening to a lot of Roseanne Cash lately, so that may pop up here.
Fantastic.
All right, guys.
I don't listen to this.
Let's not put the blame on the creator. Let's put the blame on Chris.
Yes, this is
nothing
true.
Wrong with Roseanne Cash.
No, not, you know.
All right. Let's talk about some comics. Tom,
you
crazy cats.
Chris waves his hands at us.
Tom, per tradition, why don't you kick us off? You've got a healthy stack of books over there.
Yeah.
Looks like you came ready to go.
A lot of it was okay.
Ready to fight.
You wanted to talk about this one, right, Sal? So I'm not going to talk about this one.
Yeah, I was going to.
Okay. That's the magic of audio is that no one could see I could have held
discussing.
I could have held up an issue of Tarot.
Well, yeah,
my numerous my collection of Tarot.
Talk about what
Tarot.
You wish.
I wanted to talk about Young Liars number 15 by David Lapham. I know it's getting canceled in a few issues, but this has been maybe my favorite issue of it. If you follow the story at all, which is hard to do almost on purpose because the guy telling the story is a liar, the narrator, so you don't know what exactly is true and what's not true, but this issue is basically, there is a panel where he explains the plot so far, and it's just completely and utterly ridiculous to hear him explain it. You know, there's spiders coming to impregnate her, but they make us forget who we are and we live in this town. So what he's doing is, if you've read this series, like the first half of the book sort of took place in one story, and then there was a switch where you're supposed to think that none of that really happened and that he's somebody else, but now he's trying to make all the people in the town act like the people from the first story, and now you don't really know anymore which one was fake and which one was false.
Holy crap.
So it's...
No wonder this book's getting canceled.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. But one of the things I always liked about it was sort of so like crazy and like convoluted and eating its own tail that it almost became just one and done. Because it didn't... By the time you got to the end of the story, the end of the issue, you didn't know if it happened or not. So it was, and there was always weird little moments. You kind of got the general feeling of what was going on, but who's
the
good guy, who's
the
bad guy.
Is the main character a liar, or is he just sort of delusional?
He's a coward, crazy.
Because I kind of
he's a liar. He's delusional and just a straight up liar.
Because does he believe some of the stuff he's saying?
There's a little douchebaggery going on there as well.
Yeah, no question. I haven't caught up on that series. I'm waiting for the end of it to to read it.
Should read the whole thing.
You're waiting to dig it out of its grave.
Yeah, basically.
But I don't know if reading it all at once would make it any.
Because
the whole goal of it is sort of like you don't know what's true at all. It could flip either way.
Right.
At the end of an issue, it could be one, this is true, he's crazy, or maybe it really is an alien invasion, because there's sort of an atmosphere where that could be what happens in the book. It's not very set in reality, per se, as we've said many times. And it's going to make me kind of sad that it gets canceled, but I can see why. It is, it's pretty much everything that really uptight comic book fans would absolutely hate in this story, of like getting to the end of a story and finding out, oh, it's all made up. Like right. They're all, as Julie Schwartz said, they're all imaginary.
Yeah, newsflash.
They're all made up. But people get so touchy.
Oh, real.
People get touchy when they get to the end of it and they think, oh, it doesn't quote unquote count, you know, whatever. You know, that sort of
None
means.
Of it counts.
But yeah, but the whole purpose of this book, I
nothing
think, is
we
kind
do
of
here matters.
Nothing. Yeah, we're not making a difference. But
I know I'm not.
The whole point of it is that it sort of twists that around, and I'll miss it. It's very unconventional.
Do you think that he'll be able to sort of wrap it up before it, you know, ends untimely?
You could just end it with this one.
Seems like an odd book to try and make an ongoing out of, like, Yeah. To just continue that story.
Us on the other hand, you could just do whatever you want.
Want with it. Yeah.
Because you've already set up the precedent that you don't know. Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, like, it sounds like a bad thing, but you could just kind of could have ended it with this issue and been like, that's the end.
That's it. You're not getting any more.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's the end. What happens? He's looking through some giant wall, like a hole in the wall. What's going on? Into his own room?
That's
this
it.
Is insane.
That's all you get.
This is all you get. This figure is insane.
Out, you got to figure out the rest yourself.
You got it's in there. It's in there. It's like Final Crisis. All the meaning.
Well, you've picked this book like, what, four, five times?
I've picked
times
it like four or five times.
Yeah, that's,
hey, listen, there's only so many books I bought.
Oh, no, true. No, I wasn't complaining. I was
not by
like
the looks of the stack sitting on the table.
Yeah, well, it's I like things that are weird.
There's a lot of weird shit.
There's a lot of good stuff, but this one I got to the end and I was like, oh, I like Young Liars. So long.
It's goodbye, good book. It's good. Young Liars.
I'm trying to pick my way through Stray Bullets, and I'm enjoying it. It's some pretty heavy stuff, but
yeah,
I'm digging it. It's
he doesn't tell happy stories.
He does not tell happy
though
stories.
Though this one has an absurd quality to it that I would find hard to say that it's a really dark book, because it's so absurd. It's hard to take any of it as being really like, oh, that's so messed up.
Right.
It's like everything in it's
all
weird
messed,
and
yeah,
messed up.
Yeah.
No,
it's more messed up than it is like sad and depressing.
Yeah, it's just sort of goofy, weird than it is like depressing stories of women. You know, like there's as they keep trying to escape, Sadie, quote unquote, she isn't Sadie, but she's supposed to be, keeps getting hurt all the time. You know, and that's kind of sad and depressing, but it just comes across as sort of just weirdly absurd.
Mm-hmm. Humorous, and it's you know, it's funny because I don't know her kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you often find yourself in a position where you feel bad because you know?
But that's kind of a Homer Simpson quote, where it's, oh, it's funny because
I don't know him.
When he was that was the Simpsons episode where he had to go to a driver training after he got a DUI, and he was watching the
old Mel Brooks line of, it's comedy is.
Tragedy is when it happens to you.
Yeah,
comedy
yeah.
is when it happens to somebody else, yeah. or something like
something
that.
Something like that. I fall on a.
And then I think there's something about the Schwartz at the end.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, you can't.
Got to edit it out when they put it in the quote
for
books.
Kids.
Yeah.
I really
or put a mature reader.
Oh, don't. Let's not get into that.
Yeah,
no, let's not get into that. Go listen to last week's 11 o'clock comics. Green Lantern Corps number 36.
Cool.
I was talking to Sal earlier this week about it at work. Everyone take a drink.
Take
right,
a drink.
Tom?
I was going to anyway.
And what kind of amazed me about this issue, whenever I sat it down, I was like, man, that was a lot of story in 22 pages. I actually had to go back and physically count the pages again to make sure that it wasn't an oversized issue. Pete Tomasi.
They would have charged you.
You would have known.
The first thing I did was look at the cover prices.
They weren't giving you
$3.99 book?
They weren't giving you extra pages for nothing. Just look at the price.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Just count to see if it's 22 pages.
This is only 16.
There was a tremendous amount of story packed into this. Have you read it, Tom?
Yes, I did.
We've got, first of all, the spoilers for anyone that's not reading this in trade. The revelation at the end of the last issue was that Sinestro is Saranic's father. Now, Saranic is the other Korrigarian.
Is that how you say her name, Saranic? I'm not questioning it.
Saranic.
I don't know.
Saranic.
I don't know.
We'll say Saranic.
It works for me.
Like ceramic?
Like ceramic. Saranic.
Say Saranic. You say sabotage.
Okay. Saranic.
Sabotage.
Okay. Yeah, sabotage. Saranic. That might be. Saranic is the other Korrigarian. Who is the medical Green Lantern? She was a doctor and then became a Green Lantern.
For those that may not know, that's Sinestro's home
world. Home world, yes. Yeah. And we find out at the end of last issue, it was kind of a Luth and Vader, you know, I'm your father moment. And this issue kind of gets into her backstory and the secret origin of her and how Sinestro kind of had to give her up at you know, very early in her life and give her, you know, she ends up, her mother kind of runs off because he goes a little crazy. But,
became a fascist dictator.
I mean, he's an extremist. But, you know.
It really is a Darth Vader, you know, Luke and Leia kind of thing. Well, he tracks her down. Yeah. Later in her early adolescence, and finds her whenever she's sleeping at her foster parents' house, and sedates her, and that explains where her tattoo came from. He puts this tattoo on her face, the two triangles.
She talked about, like, I woke up one day and had a tattoo on my face.
Yeah.
Was there one?
That's what I'm asking, because I was just thought, oh, it's not a big deal, but I would think that
It smacks of retcon, but...
Of why she... Well, they could just always... I just
the guy who like designed... how long has that character been around?
Since the Green Lantern Corps or Recharge, the miniseries. Okay,
so yeah, she was relatively new character.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, she's not like a 70s Green Lantern character or anything.
I mean, it makes sense why it's in there, but I was like, you wake up with a face tattoo one day, you'd
notice. Yeah. Is that a wart? What is that?
What's up about it is that it's not just a tattoo. It's a biological homing device. So he reveals that he knows where she is all no matter what, because he can track her with his tattoo.
So it gets don't have Facebook in the
She can't Twitter. Can she Twitter?
She can't Twitter where she is.
It's a Twitter tube.
She's blocked her followers, so he would have to ask her permission.
But I finished this part. There's three stories in the
Twitter Galactic.
In this issue, and at the end of kind of like this first story, I'm like, they could have stretched that out to an entire issue. It would be totally conceivable for him to do that, and you almost expect him to.
Not a Marvel book.
But no, it's over pretty quick, but you get all the information you need, and then it switches to this huge jailbreak that's going on Oa, and so you get this huge action scene in the middle of the book as shit is just cutting loose on Oa, and it gives you enough of what's going on there to move the story along, and then it goes to the third story, which is the Ion character, Sodom Yat. Is that how we're pronouncing
that's
it?
That's how I say it.
Sodom?
When I say it.
Sodom. In conversation. Yeah, I say yacht.
Where he's
in loose conversation whenever I bring up Sodom Yat.
His home planet, this is getting really, really dorky geeky now, but his home planet is Daxam, which is where Mon-El is from. So
it's not only like Sodomy at. What is that? Who's
right? Alan Moore.
Oh, that would be
fucking Alan. It's
biblical, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, all that stuff.
So, Sodomy.
Yeah,
I'm getting
He's kind of a badass. Not only is he a Green Lantern, but he's got access to the Ion Force, and he basically has Superman's powers.
What the hell is the Ion? What is the Ion Force? What's the difference between that and the regular Green Lantern stuff?
Some living energy thing. Power goes to 11. Yeah, His power goes up. This power goes up to 11. And
was Kyle the first Ion? Was that the first appearance of the Ion Force?
I think he was Ion when he was Green Lantern in the Green Lantern book, and it was just this concept that kind of stuck around, and then they made it into some.
Is it kind of the same thing for the Green Lanterns as Parallax is for the Sinestro Corps?
It doesn't have like a mind to influence you. It's just kind of
there. It's like a jellyfish or something.
It just hangs out.
It's like a jellyfish.
It looks like a whale, actually, I think.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And as I'm understanding it, it doesn't live in him. He actually has to ask for permission to access the Ion Tower.
Daddy for the keys.
Well, yeah, he has to kind of
like report. Like a Porsche.
He has to report into the Guardians and say, "Hey, I need a little boost, a little something."
Make me feel good in the morning. I need something to give me straight.
Like crack dealers, man. Come on, man.
I just need a taste.
That's great and all, but apparently during the whole jailbreak, is it Scar? Is that what they're calling the Guardian that was
the one that's crying black tears?
Yeah, the one that was touched by the end. She, I guess, is watching over the Ion controls,
the button, the one button. Yes or no?
Yeah, it's just a toggle.
But yeah, she kind of gives him the finger, and so he's in the middle of fighting Mongol and doesn't have his Datsum yellow sun powers because he's on the home world, and he doesn't have access to the iron power. So, but anyway, so it's all this stuff going on. Are you confused yet? And I just set it down, and I was like, man, they are writing one hell of a space opera right now. It really was. It was like an opera.
You got to get it all ready for Blackest Night. You got to pump, you know, get all that stuff out of the way.
You got to get there. You got to get there. Yeah. You can't take your time.
But just a tremendous amount of story in 22 pages, which it just impressed the shit out of me. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, if you're not reading if you're a Green Lantern fan, you're reading the main book, and you're not reading Core, it's been pretty damn solid.
I'll step it up. If you're a sci-fi fan and you're not reading the Green Lantern books, you're missing out because they're awesome.
When we were saying the name Sodom Yacht out loud, isn't it weird that you could go a very long time reading comic books and not say certain things out loud? Like you could go like 2 decades reading Sodom Yacht without being forced to reveal your pronunciation.
Yeah. I'm the worst at it because I can't pronounce regular words, you know, normally. I'll read it and shit. Go, how the hell, you know, yeah, and then... Yeah, something like that. It's like, well,
this podcasting's really forced people to expose their weakness in pronouncing.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't know it was Sienkiewicz for years.
What did you think it was?
Sienkiewicz. Yeah. So
I just referred to him as Bill S. Bill. I thought it was a pen name. I didn't think it was real.
Oh, okay. What is the
Z in there?
Who's got a real name?
Proper pronunciation of Thor's hammer.
Mjolnir.
Okay.
Mjolnir.
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 Like Jardiner.
Yeah, it was usually whenever the J's kind of silent. Yeah. Mjolnir.
Mjolnir. I would read it and go,
I know what it is.
Yeah.
Hammer.
It's a hammer.
Thor's hammer.
Thor's hammer. Mjolnir.
Mjolnir. Mjolnir. That's, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's
correct. Mr. Suntress, not corrected, but found out and passed along. Oliver Coppiel. It's Coppiel.
Oh, bullshit.
Coppiel.
Oh, Coppiel.
I don't believe it.
It's Coppiel.
He's making that up.
That is straight from the artist's
mouth.
He has no right to
Coppiel
dictate how we say his name.
This is America.
Say your name say however we feel like.
This is America.
Coppiel is much better.
Yeah.
Coppiel.
Coppiel.
It's not a Q in there.
It's French.
Whatever.
Must
is
be,
he French?
It must be.
That's French. With a name like Coppiel.
I don't know. Yeah,
it must be
know.
A diphthong in there.
Well, maybe that is, you know, right, because I thought he was Asian with Coppiel. I don't know why.
Yeah. You thought, I always assumed that he was a delightful Frenchman.
Yeah.
Delightful.
I don't know why.
Well, Asian. I mean, in my mind, he wears like a beret and he has like a, he's dressed sort of like a mime almost. And with like a, like sort of a scarf wrapped around. He's always eating a baguette and drinking wine. Yeah, he's always drinking wine and eating a baguette.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want, with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. Chris uses this service on his Xbox 360 and personal laptop.
And I love it!
He loves it! So head on over to netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today.
All right, Sal, are we ready to jump in?
Sure. My top of the stack
for like the year.
Yeah, is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Century 1910 by Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill.
I can speak with that accent. Yes, you can that accent the whole time.
This is the third volume of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen series.
Is it third or Does Black Dossier
is a standalone. It's not a volume. It's a standalone supplemental kind of thing. So this is volume three.
Just checking. Just making sure.
And this one they're doing a little bit differently. They're doing three like 72-page mm-hmm. prestige.
Oh, first issues. From top shelf. By the way, this is
yes,
this
the
is
first top from top shelf, and it's very nice. It's very lovely.
Oh, they did a fantastic job packaging it.
You know, the League stuff is one of my favorite series out there, and I hope he keeps doing League stuff. And it's a weird book to recommend to people because while I absolutely love it, I can completely see why it would not interest people at all. I mean, if you said you hated it, I wouldn't be shocked, and I wouldn't try and argue with someone because it's very, it plays into my own personal, like, obsessive compulsive disorder to research stuff constantly.
Oh, then it's perfect
for you. I mean, that's why. I mean, it's perfect for me because, you know, what Alan, if you haven't read the League books before, basically what Alan Moore has done is taken characters from literary sources, mostly books, and thrown them together into this sort of League of Heroes in a alternate reality Victorian age England. And they go out and in the first series, they go out and
the Martians from
well, that's the second the Martians, yeah, and it's attack, and all the stories themselves are sort of loosely based on existing stories, and then he just throws all these characters into them, so they're very heavily steeped in all sorts of like little nuggets, little Easter eggs, literary stuff, characters that you may know or may not know of, but exist in some form or another. Mm-hmm. And generally, it's very old characters because he's using the stuff that's not
the free ones.
Yeah, the what do you call it?
Public domain.
Public domain characters. So, in this book, it's basically Mina Harker, who is a character from Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Winona Ryder for the movie fans.
Winona Ryder, yes, that character. Who's she's from the first series and the second series, and now she's still alive because she is a vampire. And she's in this book, and she's still in the League, along with her son that she had with Alan Quatermain.
Did you read the text pieces in the back?
I haven't. No, I haven't yet.
I'm not going to.
Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil something for you. But okay. Something you just said isn't true.
Oh, that's not her son? It's not Alan Quatermain's son?
Mm-hmm. It's Quatermain no. Jr.?
Really?
Which, by the way,
why the hell does she call him Quatermain? Or why do they call him Quatermain?
Well, he may be Alan Quartermain's son.
Oh, is it not her son?
I'm not going to say anymore.
I'll read the book.
You'll be surprised. It's good. It's good.
But okay. She's, just for clarification, she's not a full-fledged vampire.
Pretty sure, yeah, she is. I mean, he never really gets into it that much.
But I mean, she walks around in the sunlight. Well, she
was, you know what? Now that I think about it, I have to go back and remember.
She has some
traits. She was turned, but then something happened, and, well, because Dracula was killed.
Yeah,
and
I don't think she was finally
turned. Yeah, it's like she wasn't turned. Because
I feel like I know something. I feel I have a nugget of information that would
Well, just tell me now.
Oh, it's not Alan Quartermain's son. That's Alan Quartermain.
Oh, it is.
Him and Mina went to some Ugandan pool that makes you immortal. Oh,
so he has her younger, youth kind of thing.
It made her younger again, and it made him younger again. So he's passed himself off as
being, his son
because it would be too suspicious. I was wondering because there was a
part in it where it was kind of creepy because they seemed to have like they were kind of close.
Yes. They get closer.
Well, anyway, this particular book is like I said, it's steeped in so much literary stuff that I personally have spent way too much time already going through and like Googling everything I can and going back, and I have books of like Jess Nevins is a guy, an author who has written two books on the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. The first two volumes he's written companions. Not annotations. But they're more companions that explain who all the characters are. And he's also written a book. It's basically like an encyclopedia of Victorian age characters and devices and stuff. It's a huge tome. So I go through I take this issue and I go through that and I go on Google and Wikipedia and I've been trying to sort of annotate it as I go along, and I'm, five paragraphs in, and of writing annotations and 2 pages into the book. And it's just like, Jesus Christ. But I love doing that. So
I caught myself today after we had talked about it a little bit. I'm on the internet and I'm reading stuff about like English currency. We get into the opera. And
yeah, three penny opera,
and then then I'm researching. It takes me on to why it was called three penny opera and what a three pence is.
Right,
and it's just you read. Yeah, there's so much. I mean, you could just into one thing. Yeah, into the other.
I mean, I don't know where Alan Moore comes up with all this stuff. He must do nothing but read constantly, and other than write. But even so, I mean, I think if you take all that away, it's still an entertaining story about these characters and this adventure they're on. It's very pulpy.
You don't have to know who Carnacki is.
Yeah, you don't need any of that. And I think more than any of the other volumes, this one is a little more sort of pandering to the people that really enjoyed the first two and all those things into it. I mean, he just gets into so many little things and reveals things as you're reading the story. And
I think
just
it's also the format. You would never be able to get away with having so many people singing going on in the story in a 22-page comic.
And I was going to ask you, but you kind of explained it whenever you were talking about Three Penny Opera. I was going to say, why is there so much singing? It's like the musical Buffy episode
Basically, he's written a musical. I mean, that's these characters break into song at certain points, but it makes sense. It's not as hokey as it seems.
It's like a narration.
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't know it was a song unless there were the musical notes by it.
All the songs are from an opera called the Three Penny Opera, which was written, I don't know, like 1610 or something.
No. It's a fairly recent, I believe.
No? It's a German opera from like...
I was thinking is that the updated versions are like jazz standards. So I was thinking...
Oh, yeah, those songs all went... They were redone. Okay. Mac the Knife is from this, from this opera. But this opera was written... Yeah, it's like, it's 1910. It was like 1910. A little bit before that, I think it was like 1908 or 1909 is when it was written.
So like the last time the Cubs won a World Series.
But he seems to be obsessed with the Three Penny Opera, and there's even like sort of strings that go from the Three Penny Opera, a particular song called Pirate Jenny that can lead you to Watchmen because of the whole Black Freighter thing. And I'm not going to get into it trying to explain it, but
he obviously uses that as inspiration for Pirate Jenny,
yeah. Which is, there's Pirate Jenny in the book. If you read it, you'll find out who she is. But, overall, it's just, I mean, for me, it's a fascinating read because for him to be able to sort of weave all this stuff in, at the same time telling just a pretty cool, pulpy sort of adventure story.
What makes Alan Moore so good is that he can make these deep, multi-layered stories, but on the surface, they're incredibly enjoyable.
Yeah,
you don't have to know everything that goes into it.
The thing I love about Alan Moore is he never forgets that these stories are supposed to be entertaining first and foremost. And everything else that he puts into it is sort of a bonus. But, the first and foremost thing in pretty much every story he's ever written is that they're entertaining in one form or another. And that's why I love his stuff. But on the art side of it, Kevin O'Neill, who's done all of the League books, and I'm a big fan of his. I've been a fan of his since like Martial Law when he was doing that.
Yeah.
I think he's just gotten better. I think this may be his best work. It was absolutely beautiful from the cover on, and there's all sorts of little stuff in here that he puts in. But
Andy Cap.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Yeah.
See him walking around the back.
Popeye's in there because it's all around like the seafaring areas and so you see those characters. But I just think artistically this may be my favorite work of his, I think. While it's still obviously Kevin O'Neill and his sort of unique, scratchy style, there's just something he did in here, and I haven't really been able to pick out what it is, but
I think the coloring is outstanding.
The coloring is outstanding, but I think it's his best work to date, and it's an expensive book. It's like $8, but it's 72 pages. It's beautiful, and... if you're into
a little
like,
mini trade,
it really is like a trade, and it's dense. One of the things that I wanted to mention about,
and it's the design sense in it is the other thing, which they've done with all of the books is like even from the initial page with on is like stylized in this sort of Victorian age, newspaper clippings and. just everything they do, and they take so much care in designing this, these league stories. I can't wait for. I mean, I bought the single issues. Yeah. I have all of the league single issues, but I can't wait for the hardcover.
Yeah,
hopefully the oversized hardcover of this one. And the other interesting. Oh, I just want to mention. Also, wanted to mention in regards to this third volume is that it's three volumes. The next one is going to be in the 1960s, yeah. And then the one after that is like present day. So yeah.
It is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen century. It's about this century,
the 20th century.
Yeah. I liked about it was that it had very much the like early. It's depressing. The world's way more depressing in it than in the previous ones, where there was always more of a sense. Very much in like how actual the real world is, you know, how history was
on the late 19th century. On the verge of a new century.
The late 19th century, there's more, you know, faith and into that progress will make everything better and build everything up. And then the early 20th century is very millennial fear and everything's falling apart and. You know, fear about the end of the world and the apocalypse as it comes every century, and the world is just sort of strangely darker. There's like the main event that sort of turns everything around is that, you know, this poor girl who just wants to like make some way in her world separate from all like the violence that her father, you know, is attacked and raped for no reason other than that she was there, you know, and that's it. And that's all that it takes for her to go back to the way, you know, things were, just how dark everything seems to be and how the league, they're not effective. They're sort of, they
meander about.
They meander about and they don't know what to do. They know something's going to happen, but
they're not cohesive. They don't work as a team.
Which I think has always sort of been a theme.
Yeah, it's always been a little bit in it, but it was
it's
always
almost
more,
like they're there. They end up being in the right place at the wrong time sort of thing.
I think this is the first time though where it just kind of was like, there wasn't even like a moment where they were in the right place at the right time because it just happened around them.
Following it, they're trying to play catch up.
And then it was all over, and they were like, "That there was not, you know,
nothing to do.
We know something's going to happen, but we don't know what it is. The serial killer, you know, is let loose.
Right.
Because, you know, and everything's just not correct. You know, there's
And I guess I should say the sort of plot in this first one is about one of the characters who's sort of a Carnacki, the ghost hunter, having dreams about a cult and them bringing something to Earth.
The Moon Child,
or calling forth the Moon Child. And
he almost
and
puts into action the events that cause it to happen, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they do. Yeah. I mean, they that was sort of an interesting thing. Of like, when they finally confront this guy, he has no plans of actually doing this until they leave.
That sounds like a good idea.
But that character is actually
Hadou.
It's Aleister Crowley from one of his books, and there's all that. I mean, that, you know, this whole storyline is basically an Aleister Crowley that book, and just these characters thrown.
Yeah,
into
and it's
it,
like so. And when you get to the back matter, it's really good. It's really interesting because you see there's a text piece that it's sort of telling what it's obviously going to tie into what happens in the next couple, you know, Mina goes on and starts almost like a Justice League of what we would consider more modern superhero type,
right?
You know, like a group of strange characters to come together that it doesn't work for whatever reason in hindsight, you know, and I just really like that whole sense of, not that the previous ones had this rosy world, but there was like a more...
There's a cleaner sort of shine to it. It was
more like an adventurous type world, like a world filled with dangerous adventure.
It was more like an Alan Quartermain adventure.
Yeah, it was like, let's go fight these savages or let's fight these alien invasions. And
I think it's kind of like an analogy to the time period, the literature of that time period too, you know.
And it's grind. It's just filled with people drinking and just like groping women,
just like prostitutes and drunken sailors and
it's
rape.
Yeah, and it's just there's no, it's not
should
adventurous.
Be parental advisory.
There should be a parental. I mentioned that on 11 o'clock.
I mean, not that, and I mean not to make it sound boring or anything, but it's not boring. But it's just not. It's not like let's go fight
it's
these alien invaders.
Indiana Jones sort of serialized. You know, squeaky clean adventure. The good
it's
guy's
just
gonna
sad.
Win.
It's like sad, and you know, then it ends with. You know, Jenny, who's Nemo's daughter wrecking the port area and just becoming a villain.
Awesome double page spread, by the way, of the Black Nautilus firing on the Black Freighter. I was going to mention that about Kevin O'Neill. Most of the book is set up in a 9-page grid, and so you get a lot of dialogue and character development, and then he just hits you over the head with these amazing 2-page spreads of stuff. But you were talking about kind of the ending, and whenever Mina is like, oh, well, we didn't avert the apocalypse or this huge disaster, and Carnacki is like, I don't think this is it.
This isn't it. I saw something much worse.
It's going to get worse. And her reaction was, oh, great, can't wait for that one.
She pretty much was like, I quit. I'm not going to deal with this anymore.
She's been doing it for a while.
But no, it's different. It's different enough from the previous ones that it's not just a retread of like the same type of stuff, and it's unique enough, and the characters themselves are different enough. You know, Carnacki's Ghost on Orlando, who's this sort of immortal transsexual who's like changing sexes and like
I was asking, who is Orlando?
And isn't he from from some book?
It's from Virginia Woolf book that he, it's a man who wakes up one day and he's a woman, and it was very sort of beginning of a women's movement by Virginia Woolf. And I don't know where the whole sort of Arthur comes in that character's.
Well, he wrestled it from the hands of the Lady in the Lake, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously. I think
there's some liberties.
When you get into some of these, there's not a tremendous amount of backstory.
No. Yeah, I mean, Alan Moore lifts these characters, embellishes them. Yeah.
Raffles?
Yeah.
Raffles the Thief. That's another character. Well, all the characters are
just from the makeup of the characters themselves are different, because you don't have like a Mr. Hyde or a Captain Nemo. Yeah. You have a thief. You have a guy who sees ghosts. You have sort of this this immortal transsexual who doesn't seem to really care about.
He's just bored.
He's just bored. Yeah. He's there because he's bored.
He's looking for anything to do.
And it's a different chemistry to it because seem to want to do.
They're thrown together.
Yeah. They're not. It's not like men of action. They're like men of just stumbling around and like getting to things too late or like getting there too early. And it's just a different, a real different feel to the book, which I quite enjoyed. And I loved that it was longer and they could do the stuff like the songs from it because it fit perfectly. It was a great narration to what was happening in the book.
Oh, there's a good dance number at the end.
Oh yeah, that was cool. It's weird. It's very different.
A pantyless dance number.
They took advantage.
It was 1910.
They took advantage of the change in format to do some stuff that you wouldn't.
I wish more stuff came out like this. I'd much rather pay.
It's
$9
a big
bucks
satisfying
for,
chunk.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'd rather pay $9 for a 72-page book than 3 22-page books or whatever.
And even though there's like two more parts of the story, you're like, oh, that was good. It was a good big chunk of story. And then you'll wait a little while to get the
next one. I have a feeling that each chunk will be very standalone if you want, but they'll probably be a lot tied together. But yeah, this was a very satisfying read. Just to sit at home, put on some music, kick back, relax, grab a cup of coffee or
I didn't do anything.
Glass of wine, read some Lee.
I stripped down. I got the oils and
some
candles,
boxers,
some pancake batter.
I just laid out and I just turned on the sun lamps and I just chilled out and I just read it. It was great.
Sat on the couch.
Read it. Read it on a train.
I didn't really have to get set up for it.
You got kids.
Chris, yeah, I take free time when I can.
Yep.
You really like to relax when you read.
I do like to relax when I read, absolutely.
You have like a chair.
You get to see the man cave of loneliness tomorrow.
Tom, don't.
Don't go in there. Tom, sit down in the chair and then like a needle.
Hey, Tom.
Wakes up in a trunk.
He's in my box. He's in one of my long boxes. He's gone forever.
I had to split you up in between three of them.
He's gone forever.
He's in Mylar.
We never hear from Tom again.
I'm like, Chris's. Yeah, I'll Twitter tomorrow.
Ooh, did you read that? Not that. Keep going. That one.
Unwritten?
Yes.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, would you like it?
I liked it a lot.
I thought it was a great idea.
It's an absolutely fantastic idea.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it Wade?
No, it's...
No.
This is one of the unbooks.
Well, yeah, there were three unbooks, and I actually want to talk about one of the other ones. What the hell's an unbook? There were three books that premiered
Unthinkable,
with
Unknown, and Unwritten all came out the same day. Okay. But like,
what the hell? Is this some kind of promotion? What's going on?
Unwritten is Unbooks. It's written by Mike Carey with art by Peter Gross, and it's about a grown man. It's like if someone wrote Harry Potter, but based Harry Potter on their own kid, and then that kid grows up.
Right.
So he's Tommy Taylor, like boy adventurer, and his father, who wrote the books, disappeared at some point, and he just goes around to conventions signing shit as Tommy Taylor.
There's been like 13 of the Tommy Taylor adventures, and they're all like Tommy Taylor in this, you know, it's very much based like on Harry Potter. He's basically Harry Potter, but it's Tommy Taylor.
And it turns out, though, that he might not be who he thinks he is. He might not be the actual son of the guy. And then it takes an even weirder turn that some people start thinking that he's the actual character Tommy Taylor come to life.
He has magical powers. And
that his foe is real. Yeah. And that there's people that think he's like some sort of messiah that's come. And it's very, very well done. And because you don't quite know what to... I mean, it will... I think it...
We know where it's going.
We know where it's going, but there's like a real interesting line of where, you know, his villain shows up. Is at the beginning, he's at a convention, and a guy dressed up like his arch nemesis asks him some like, some question about like, I forget what
the
exact question.
Why would the water burn my eyes?
Yeah, why would her tears hurt me? Like, holy, some nerd question.
Some very fanboyish
question. And he gets escorted out, and then he's captured by the same guy. Well, maybe not the same guy. Looks like him, and he just thinks it's the guy from the convention, but it seems to be the villain from the books who, you know, is trying
very Voldemort kind of character. Okay. And the thing I liked about Tom, the guy Tom that plays this character, he's sort of put off by the whole thing.
He
hates his father because his father disappeared on him and sort of left him with this whole thing. He isn't a writer, so it's not like he can make
money. He doesn't get any money from it.
He just goes around to conventions and signs the books that his father wrote as Tommy Taylor.
Yeah.
But he hates that. He's just sort of miserable in his existence, but at the same time living off of these stories. And as it goes on, he's just getting more and more peeved at, you know, the events of what's happening, you know, because, you know, the story comes out. There's a reporter that busts the story that he may not be Tommy Taylor. He may not be the author's real son.
Outs him, yeah.
And so now everybody's like pissed off at him, calling him a phony and everything. And then it comes out that maybe, you know, I don't want to ruin the whole story, but yeah, it was really well done and just a great idea.
40
and,
pages for a buck.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, let me grab that.
It's definitely,
sold out, buddy. You missed out.
But
son of a!
I'm sure it'll get a reprint.
All right,
it was good. It was really good.
Yeah, it got me to read the. I'm going to read the next one.
Yeah,
darn it! I gotta remember that Vertigo does those dollar first issues from time to time.
Yeah, it's what's your problem, dude?
You go to two comic shops every week. Good lord!
Yeah, what do you well, it was whenever I walked out with like 25 comics this week. It was ridiculous. Can I talk about one of the other uncomics?
Yeah,
sure.
Sable's Unthinkable.
Unforgettable.
And the artist on this is Julian Tedesco. Julian Tutino Tedesco.
Who did the cover? Because it looks like the same.
It's Azaceta.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Paul Azaceta of BPRD 1946, which, I hear 1947.
He's doing something for Marvel right now, isn't he?
Azaceta's been all over the place doing a lot of stuff.
He's pretty awesome.
Mark Sable has
Good-looking man, too.
Is he?
Tall, good-looking guy.
Yeah, I can see him.
Spanish guy.
Wasn't he on...
Celebrity
Apprentice.
And Omi and all those guys.
Did he get to talk? Did they cut out?
None of them talked. None of them said a word. You never heard any of them say anything.
Yeah. But Mark Sable's worked some kind of high-concept stuff before. He did...
Haze.
Did he just get arrested?
Over this book.
Tell me that story after.
So Unthinkable is an interesting concept in that it is set up pre 9/11. It's like 1998, and it's two brothers. One is in the military. One is a novelist and screenwriter. And the screenwriter brother kind of picks the mind of the military brother for
research.
And he does like Michael Bay type big military action
awesome stuff.
Yeah, big awesome
you
movies.
You mean awesome movies.
Yeah. Awesome movies.
Yeah.
Michael Bay.
He awesome. Does, yeah, big bangs. And his brother kind of hates him because he sees them as...
ripping them off
as,
a little.
No, as promotions for the Army. And
oh, okay. Gotcha.
You know, it's like, yeah, you know, the guys at the Pentagon are going to love that. It's a great advertisement for him. So we kind of fast forward to 2001, 9/11 mm-hmm. happens, and the screenwriter brother gets a bunch of other stuff happens. I'm just glossing it over. The screenwriter brother gets approached by the military that they have realized that one of the ways that they can help combat terrorism is to think out of the box, to think creatively and get one step ahead of the terrorist.
Right.
And so they approach him to be a part of a think tank because he's a screenwriter who has kind of predicted some of the stuff that is happening, sure. you know, years before in novels. And so he becomes part of a military think tank with someone from like the CDC that deals with biological weapons, someone from,
there a rad like X Game guy in there?
There's a conspiracy theorist. There's a conspiracy theorist. There is a religious guy. More of the what do you call him? The evangelist.
Okay.
Evangelist writer. And so they get this think tank of people that can maybe think a couple steps ahead of the terrorists. Well, they run out of, you know, they come up with these great concepts and eventually the program runs out of budget and they get
canceled.
Shut down.
Right.
Fast forward to 2010 and a bunch of the things that they had predicted would happen start happening. And so the military kind of brings this one guy. That's kind of where it leaves off, is that several of these apocalyptic terrorist scenarios start happening, and which leads into the next issue. So
of course, imagine, like, go after these guys probably, right?
The government. Perhaps. There's a really, besides the story being, you know, a nice concept, and it's only six issues, so we'll see how it plays out. There is a fantastic single page that in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 panels fast forwards the storyline at least a couple years, and it was done in a really, really nice way that I haven't seen done before.
Compress that stuff.
It compressed it. What was interesting about
it is that
each sentence of dialogue was continued into the next sentence of dialogue, okay. But it was done over a couple years time period. And so, yeah, it advanced the story and moved things along to get them to the next major point in the story. So, the artwork, beautiful, loved it. It looks it's a 5-issue limited series. So, Mark Sable's done some nice stuff before. This seems to be a nice high concept military something terrorism.
He got stopped at the airport by TSA.
What happened with that?
They were asking him about the book. This was all the terrorist stuff that he was writing in it.
Well, so, like, he had it on him?
They stopped him, and he had one of the scripts for one of the upcoming.
And they read it?
Yeah. And it was filled with all this terrorist conspiracy stuff in it.
I guess I could see maybe people get kind of freaked out.
I don't know if there was a cavity search.
Ooh, ouch. I always often wondered when I was going to get maybe a knock on my door. Hopefully nothing will ever happen to the Hoover Dam, because I once called the Hoover Dam
asking for, like, structural integrity.
Yeah, questions. Well, no, I got a hold of a guy.
What would it take to knock you down?
Yeah, that's basically what I asked him, because I was working on a story idea I had, and so I called him, like, well, you know, how could I blow up? You know, how could I shut down the Hoover Dam?
Dear Hoover Dam employee, yeah. How can I blow it up?
And he told me basically, and it's pretty fucking hard.
Can I also get your name?
Well,
and
no, I told him everything. I mean, you know, I explained everything to him what I was doing, but yeah, I
you're right. Short story.
Yeah, I was writing a short story, and it was about Nazis blowing up the Hoover, you know, trying to deactivate the Hoover Dam.
How the fuck
would you do that? You know, how would you do that? So I called the guy, and he was an engineer at the Hoover Dam.
And let me break it down for you.
He basically said, it's like, you'd pretty much have to nuke it. You'd basically have to just, you know, hit it with a
next question. Warhead. Where would one somebody get a nuclear weapon? Yeah.
But after I was talked to the guy, I'm like,
for you, sir.
Man, you know, I'm like,
can I ask you a question?
I'm just like, I hope nothing happens to Hoover Dam anytime soon, because I'm gonna get a fucking call or a knock on the door.
How would I get that much explosives?
But I mean, going back to and you know, Chris, you know this from Greg Rucka, that he had told us before that it was like he had written a story about
it was
bombings in the London train or something.
Was that Private Wars or Private Gentleman's Wars. Game?
One of the Queen and Country.
Queen and Country, a Gentleman's Game, had
a scenario of terrorists bombing the trains in London, right?
Yeah, and like the same.
And then the same scenario happened a couple years after that.
Where's Greg?
So he.
I asked him about that, and he was, he said, I think, it was a writer's panel. It was before we ever started doing Around Comics, and I asked him that, and his answer was, you know, something along the lines of. He FBI said, first of all, offices. I have friends that live there, and I thought about them and really hoped that they were safe. And my second thought was, oh my God, I hope this, you know, my stuff isn't inspiration.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, it's, but,
kind of interesting.
Yeah, but that's why in this.
Where were you, Chris?
I was here.
I didn't know him. I didn't know him at that point, so who knows what he could have been doing.
It was before I had a passport.
Greg is giving us instructions.
Do we have time for more comic talk?
I tell you, let's do it next week.
Next week?
What's my goal phone call?
Oh, we're going to talk to someone.
Yeah.
Who are we calling?
My mom.
Oh, Tom's mom. What's your mom's name, Tom? I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Terry. You never can tell. It could be any of them.
How you doing, Mr. Moore?
Doing pretty good. How you guys?
All right, good to hear from you, everyone. This is Tony Moore, one of our favorite artists and just favorite people in general.
Man with a hat.
Man with a nice hat.
The king of sausage.
I do wear a hat.
What are you, the sausage king of Kentucky, or what do you call yourself? Something like
sausage
that.
Sausage king of comics.
There you go. No.
Make him the sausage.
If you need cased meats, he's the man to go to.
So what's going on, Mr. Moore? You're coming off a couple issues here of Ghost Rider, which we've been talking about since they've come out. They've been pretty awesome. I'd imagine you're having a hell of a good time with Jason on that.
Yeah, that was a blast. It was nuts. I actually, when I was done, I kind of broke down and wrote this sappy email to the editors and Dave McKay and Jason and everybody, because I don't know, I always hear these horror stories of people who have these dream projects that they've always wanted to work on, and then when they finally get the chance to get a hold of it, and it like turns to ash in their mouths, you know, it's like some kind of twisted genie magic or something.
Monkey
and,
paw.
It wasn't like that at all. It was awesome from start to finish. I mean, it was, you know, a book that I'd wanted to draw since I was probably 12 years old, and I get this awesome script that's full of crazy shit that's like, it's like he just reached into my mind and came up with shit that I wanted to draw and put it in the script.
Wait, you mean you might want to draw demon truck drivers?
Yeah, you know, it was like it was tailor-made, and the editors were awesome. I'm still kind of amazed at some of the stuff they let us get away with. And, Dave was great. Everybody was great. So I couldn't have been happier with it. And, I totally just broke down and I couldn't help it. I got all sentimental on them.
Oh, got all mushy in an email, didn't you?
Yeah.
Whose idea was it for the Smokey and the Bandit Ghost Rider?
I guess it was probably Jason's. Yeah, he had mentioned something about it. Yeah, we had a couple ideas. There were so many of those that were so hilariously, you know, clearly just us.
Yeah.
Kind of, fiddling with our influences and, you know, the shit that we grew up on.
But at the same time, I really enjoy what Jason's, you know, doing with the character, because, like, I, you know, as an old time, long time Ghost Rider fan, I think the character sort of languished in limbo for a while, and quite honestly, it's never been that great of a character. It's always been an awesome
looking
character. Yeah, great idea, but it's been hard to pull off. But I like what he's doing with it to try and build up this legacy of the Ghost Rider and kind of trying to establish that. So looking forward to a lot of great stuff coming out of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool with the legacy stuff. I think what Jason really did that a lot of people have had a hard time getting their heads around is he just, got to the heart of the character, he's Faust by way of Evel Knievel. So, right. I mean, it's pretty boiled down. I don't understand why it's taken so long for somebody to get it so right.
Yeah, it seems like everybody always concentrates on the Evel Knievel part and forgets about what made him,
Are they trying to make it a superhero, I mean, really, if you look at the setup of the character, it's got a lot more in common with, Universal Studios Wolfman or the Incredible Hulk TV show or something at its heart. Mm-hmm. But, and then the character himself, just the guy, getting their heads around that. I think that's where Jason really stepped up and got inside both Blaze and Ketch and made them kind of unique guys and gave them a point,
Yeah,
nice. I remember talking to Phil Hester several years ago, and we were talking about you. This may have been at a Wizard World Chicago, and
I'm talking shit about him behind his back.
We were talking shit about Tony behind his back, and
want to.
And I asked Phil, because you were working a lot of independent stuff. This may have even been before Fear Agent. As what do you think Tony would be really good at doing in mainstream comics? And Phil looked at me, took him
Speedball.
it took him about a half a second. He goes, Tony would draw a bitchin' Ghost Rider. And it was nice to see that he was prophetic about that.
Not just one, but every variety of Ghost Rider you could possibly ever want to see and more.
That's awesome.
maybe see you go back to the character at some point. You and Jason have anything else cooking, or are you done after this third issue?
Well, for the time being, I've just got those three, and then that's it. I would love to do some more. I'd love to do all kinds of Ghost Rider. Modern Ghost Rider, Western Ghost Rider, any of it I would do. Editorial seemed to like it, but it's just not in the cards right now. But yeah, if they came to me and I don't know. I mean, I guess a lot of it would have to do with who was writing it too. I wouldn't want to jump on in 90s Ghost Rider, late 90s Ghost Rider.
Was this was this your first Marvel work?
Yeah, Ghost Rider All Around was my first Marvel work.
Yeah, you did a cover a few months back, didn't you?
Yeah, it was back on issue 18, actually. The big revelation, Dan Way's big revelation. And that was my first cover that I'd ever done for Marvel, and then getting to work with Jason on this.
Nice. Are you anything else coming up at? What else is coming up from you?
Well, Rick and I are set gearing up for a Punisher run. It's the Marvel U superhero Punisher, not the Marvel Max.
Not the Max. So it's Rick and Jerome and you working on Punisher, right? Is there any way that you guys could put a Texas belt buckle on him and a space suit and tell some really awesome EC flavored stories?
Just send him off into space to fight scrolls or something.
This is suspiciously like Fear Agent. No, it's not. This is the real Frank.
It's totally different.
Frank always wanted to be an astronaut. He really has dreamed since he was a child. We're just making his dreams come true.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a natural story progression, really. I mean, it's right at the heart of the character, really. really, if you look at it.
Frank's been drinking a lot in this issue. Well, he always drank in between panels in the previous ones.
Is it nice being able to work with, well, it's not that you ever stopped working with Rick, because you guys are still kind of wrapping up the stuff at Fear Agent. Are you all done with your Fear Agent work?
Well, no, not really. Fear Agent 27, the like horrifically late issue, is wrapped up on the drawing front. Mm-hmm. The colors ought to be done before too awful long, and be at press before we know it. But then we're kind of kicking around ideas for this upcoming arc, which will be probably the last arc for a while. Mm-hmm. And Mike Hawthorne's been penciling that up, and then I'm going through and working on it some, and then John Lucas is doing the finishes so that we can get it out in a pretty timely manner. And so far, I think the first issue of that, I just handed off to Lucas, so it should be done before we know it, and it looks pretty awesome. Hawthorne's storytelling is really ramped up and super dynamic. I don't know if you guys ever read like Hysteria or any of his like crazy action filled comics. But
well, I remember he did some stuff on Exterminators, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's doing a couple issues of Soloth.
Yeah, and he's doing G.I. Joe Origins now.
Yeah, he's done some of that. He did a Star Trek thing too, I think. That's I don't know when that's coming out, but.
Yeah, Mike's a good artist.
Awesome.
Yeah,
Mike is a goddamn powerhouse. He's awesome. He's a machine.
Hey, speaking of artists, I wanted to ask you a question, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it may not have been you, it may have been Jason Aaron, but one of you guys a while back had posted something either on your blog or on Twitter or something about some sort of like Japanese manga horror comic that you were using as research or something for Ghost Rider. Was that you or was that Jason, before I go any further?
Oh, it was probably Jason. We both read it.
What? Because I saw the pictures and I was like, wow, I meant to write it down because it looked unbelievable. What was that?
Oh, I'm not sure which one he had on his site. There were a couple. One was Gyo and one was Uzumaki. They're both Junji Ito comics. And they're awesome.
We have people in the peanut gallery here that are nodding their heads and agreeing that is good stuff.
Only read American.
I'm not a big manga fan, but I saw that stuff and it looked unbelievable. Just like horrific, you know, detailed, disgusting images that I wanted to get my hands on. So
I don't know what it is. I think for my money, most of the best horrors coming out of Asia right now in cinema and comics both. I think they really, in comics especially, they've really understood that, you know, you can't have shit jump out of a closet and scare you on a page. You know, it's just not going to happen. So they really try to sink their teeth into making these really disturbing concepts that, you know, after you've read it, like, you just can't stop thinking about it. It'll get under your skin, and, you know, like, everything you see will make you think about it. And, I think that's part of what I've enjoyed about Asian horror movies and comics for a long time. Well, it always gives me that, like, kind of disturbed feeling that I used to get when I watched movies like The Shining when I was a kid, you know, that, or Rosemary's Baby, that kind of, like, I don't know what it is about that kind of horror, you know. It's one thing to see a guy get his head cleaved in half or something like that, but, you know, when you're working on a conceptual level of horror and it just really gets under your skin, it's something that, like, sticks with you a little better. And for me, it's a lot more powerful anyway.
Well, that's something as a comic book artist, it's I talked with Vince, was talking about this on 11 o'clock, that he loves horror comics because he appreciates how much work and how much talent it takes to set atmosphere in a comic, to make something really creepy in a horror comic. That's a skill to be able to do that.
Yeah. I don't know that that's something I've really developed very well for myself. I still tend to go for the guy getting his face cleaved in half.
I appreciate
but it,
that.
You know, it's one of those things, like watching a guy jump cars on a motorcycle. It's, you know, can't do it, so I love watching other people do it.
That's cool. That's cool. We'll get the comic talk out of the way here because we got a couple other things I wanted to ask you about.
Don't ask him what he's wearing, please.
He told me he was going to be naked.
Oh, Jesus.
CB radio around the neck.
No, I just want to make sure that we don't miss anything. You've got one more issue of the Jason Aaron written Ghost Rider still to come out, and then you're working on Punisher with Rick, and then we have some Fear Agent, which is wrapping up. Is there anything else in the prolific life of Tony Moore that we need to be on the lookout for?
Not really. I got some miscellaneous cover images that I'll probably be releasing as they're allowed to be announced. But other than that, yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right.
Hey, you know, Corey Walker's coming back to Invincible for a couple of issues. I was thinking maybe you'd want to go back to Walking Dead and do a couple of, you know, call up Robert and see maybe a couple of Walking Dead issues throw in there.
Yeah, probably not going to be in the cards.
Well, we saw some zombies here recently. You did some, was there some zombies in Ghost Rider?
There was everything in Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
You can list anything, and it was probably in those issues of Ghost Rider.
Was there an obscure character from a 70s TV show? No, I didn't. All right, so I had a question. Actually, following you on Twitter, noticed that there was a little bit of karma in your life after you killed billions of bugs in the Exterminators, that Mother Nature has come back on your ass with a vengeance.
It's been harrowing. It's been really crazy. Ever since we bought this house, it's been like wave after wave of something. And we just got moved in March. And when we first got here, it was ladybugs, just like blankets of ladybugs over the windows. It was like that scene with the locusts and the reaping. You know, they're just covering.
Nice.
And you know, you open the door and they fall out. They're like sweeping them up with the vacuum cleaner. Kara was sweeping up like thousands of them in the vacuum cleaner and
Jesus Christ,
dumping them into this giant Rubbermaid. You know, they were still alive a lot of times, so she was just dumping them into this big Rubbermaid container, like one of the things we used to move, like that we put like comforters and stuff in, and had it full of water, and then she just put them in there to drown, and then, you know, we had like thousands of them in this like earthy bug soup. You know, letting them die.
That was the first plague of God. What came next?
Yeah, that was the malevolent or the benevolent wave. After those guys cleared out, then we started getting wasps. The brown like paper wasps that make the little honeycomb nests. And
nice.
We were killing ridiculous amounts of those guys. It was insane. Like, Carol would wake up and kill probably four or five in the bedroom before I even woke up. And then we would
go into one of our
other bedrooms. And then and when we got in there, we might kill, I don't know, 12 more, just like on the windows. Oh. And that was like every day for about a month.
Well, I know you started calling it Waspocalypse.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Have you searched the house for a scarab, an ancient golden scarab somewhere buried? Good God!
I don't know what I did. I actually think, I don't know if you've ever listened to Grant Morrison interviews or anything that where he talks about comic books being, you know, a way to cast spells. I think I've like unwittingly cast some sort of Grant Morrison. Magic on myself. That was a sort of horrible bug curse.
Well, if truckers start fucking with you, then you'll know. Then you know that you've tapped into something you need to get away from.
Time to put the pencil down.
Tony was going to call up Simon Oliver and go, "God damn you, Simon! What did you do?"
But yeah, I mean, it was horrible. We killed a shit ton of those guys. I actually was walking up the steps one night and got felt something itchy on my neck, and I reached up and grabbed him right as he was stinging my neck, like right by my jugular. So yeah, I mean, I pulled him off of me before he gave me like a full dose, which could have been horrible, you know, like if it swelled up my neck and made me pass out or God knows what.
But he turned and hissed at him. And
well, and then what really freaked me out, dude, is that you had me actually Google the word whistle pig the other day. What is a whistle pig
for the uninitiated?
It's funny because I didn't even really use that word until probably a week ago because I thought it was hilarious. Kara had heard like old people use it around here, and then my exterminator came over and I told him about it. He goes, "Oh yeah, yeah, you got to take care of those whistle pigs. They'll mess up your foundation." So from then on out, that's what I'm calling them.
Killed a live pig off his neck,
which makes it harder for me to have to go kill.
Well, it's a groundhog, right? Basically,
yeah, it's a groundhog. Yeah, okay. She named this one Wendell. The whistle pig.
And the little nice.
So it's going to make it extra hard because I set a trap, like one of those humane traps.
Yeah.
Really, the only humane thing about this is that he's, you know, not going to have to sit and try to chew his arm off before I come shoot him.
Yeah.
He thinks he's getting released.
Easy. That ain't gonna happen. He's getting drowned in that tub.
I think
government container.
Getting drowned in ladybugs. I think you might want to call up Simon Oliver and have him send you a script which involves like naked nymphomaniacs carrying bags of money.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I think there might have been a script like that. It was maybe one of those issues I didn't get to draw.
It was Hawthorne. Hawthorne got that.
Yeah, that's Hawthorne got that.
Do you ever talk to Simon anymore?
Here and there. I try to stay in touch, you know, because since we're not working together anymore, we don't really have like a lot of calls to draw on the phone
sure.
at length. But every once in a while, I give him a shout and just kind of see what's up. And a lot of times, you know, he's got some new tidbit of news about the Exterminators TV show.
Oh, very cool! Very cool. That'd be great.
Imagine what's going to happen to you now. That gets on TV.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, yeah. Your house will just turn into one big-ass bug.
You got a whistle horse. What the hell is a whistle horse?
Yeah. They're going to be like some sort of stick, like flying Great Danes that sting me and shoot centipedes out of their mouths. It's going to be ridiculous.
Shit.
Yeah, and I didn't even tell you guys about the carpenter bees. We have these big carpenter bees.
I hate those bastards.
Doing our house to shit. Like, I mean, I said on Twitter it was like the Langoliers. I mean, they were just gnawing. I've got a support beam on my deck that they just like gnawed to Swiss cheese. It's ridiculous.
They're setting a trap for you, man. They're just weakening the support, so.
Yeah.
Those things are nasty. I hate those. They about took our deck apart. They're
real bastards. Oh, but, I hate them. But we painted this house with poison. The Exterminator showed up and had a badminton racket in hand and was just knocking them out of the air for a while. And then had a 30-gallon tank of poison in the back of his truck that he just literally painted my house with.
Oh, jeez. Whenever the Exterminator, when he left, did you give him a copy of the first trade?
Most of my stuff's still in storage, but I've been talking to him quite a bit. So, he's actually a pretty cool guy. I like hanging out with him.
So. First name basis with your Exterminator. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much been on call. So, yeah.
He's on retainer. The first Exterminator on retainer.
Much, yeah. Nice. Well, Tony, I think that'll about wrap it up. Unless you got anything else, any other mystical occurrences around the house.
Nothing I can think of. All right. Yeah, I guess if anything comes up, I'll let you guys know.
All right. Well, before we let you go, I wanted to make a hopefully a little announcement, a little confirmation here. Are we going to be able to see you in September?
Yes.
Yay!
Nice. All right.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Don't bring any of that shit with you.
Leave the curse at home, man.
I'll open up my box of comics that I bring up there, and it's just gonna be all like some sort of horrible, like flying bookworm larva or something.
It's gonna be like opening up the Ark of the Covenant. Yeah. Shit's gonna be flying.
Exactly. Yeah.
A snake with eagle's wings.
We don't need no fucking whistle pigs at the con. running around scaring people.
That's it. I'm going to open up my short boxes, and that's what's going to be in there. It's just going to be like a nest of fucking groundhogs and sawdust.
Nice. Was is Kara going to be able to make the trip up with you?
Oh yeah!
Awesome!
Oh, yeah.
Awesome! That's great! That's great! I know. She's your art dealer at your shows. So.
Oh yeah, she's my pit boss. Yep. I don't think I could do a con without her.
Well, I just want to let you know it made my week whenever you let me know that you're going to be able to make it up. So it's really looking forward to seeing you, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry that it took me so long to get in touch with you. I can't wait to do it though. It's going to be a blast.
Cool.
And like I said, I'll bring up some ale-8, and we can mix up some bourbon.
Nice.
Have a real Kentucky experience.
Nice. Now we're talking.
And the whistle pigs.
And the whistle pigs.
You can drink with them. You're going to have a show. It's going to be a contest. Drink.
I'll have a pocket full of them.
Well, yeah, I think I was telling you earlier, one of the nice things about the show is that it's one day, so whenever we're done on Saturday, you don't have to worry about taking stuff back to your room to do sketches for Sunday. So once it's closed on Saturday, we're free to go out and drink all the bourbon with whistle pigs that we want.
Rock and roll.
All right, man. Well, Tony, it is always a pleasure to hear from you, man.
Well, it's been great. I'm glad we got to do this.
Absolutely, and we'll make it not so long in between visits, in between now and the next one, and make sure and tell Kara that we said hi.
I sure will.
All right.
Don't be strangers.
Oh, we will. All right, bye-bye, Tony.
Bye, Tony.
Bye, whistle pigs.
Sawdust
and whistle pigs.
That was good. Good lord.
What's in that box? Whistle pigs.
Wasps. Giant wasps.
It's a Tupper made filled with dead drowned ladybugs.
Good lord. Why did you bring horrific. That with
you? You don't want to know.
I got nowhere else to put them. I'm running out of space.
You don't even want to know why I had to bring it with me.
He's like Tim Robbins in The Shawshank Redemption, where he's just walking around dropping carcasses of bugs out of his pants to try and get rid of them anywhere he can, because the house is just full of them. He's just got, God, if I woke up and there was four wasps in my bedroom, I would never be able to sleep again. There's no way.
Honest to God, there was about a 2 week period where all of his tweets ended with the number sign and then waspocalypse.
Wasp. I lived in a house in Madison where we had horrible spider problems. Like every night before I'd go to bed, there'd be a giant spider about that big in every corner of the room. When I'd wake up after I'd killed them, there'd be like three more. It's just this unlimited supply of spiders that were constantly in my room every night that I had to smash. I had to kill them before I went to bed. I could not sleep with these spiders.
Like a fucking isolation chamber or something if that was the case. I couldn't. There's no way.
It's gross.
I'd move. I'd burn my house down and move.
I didn't have an option.
There's no fucking way. When I was a kid, I went camping once when I was like, I don't know.
This
story's
going to be fucked up.
This is like one of my first camping trips as a kid, and got the tent up and everything. Go to bed, wake up next morning, and I shit you not, there was probably 3,000 fucking spiders inside my tent, just everywhere.
Oh shit!
Inside the tent, and just scarred me for life.
Just fucking, how big were they? Out of that tent?
They were like they were like you know the daddy long legs, so they were big looking. I mean, they're not they can't do anything. But waking up to like a tent, it was probably 2,000. It was probably like
three or four.
No, it was covered.
But they were close together.
It was a close knit.
They were close to his face.
It was probably. I mean, I didn't count them, but because I was too busy running out of the fucking tent. But
there was
probably. There's probably 100 or so. I mean, it was just the whole ceiling of the tent was just covered in fucking spiders, and I was like, 8 or something, and I just woke up and I had a deathly fear of spiders for a long time after that.
I can't picture Sal ever being that young. In my mind, I just see this little body with Sal's head as it is now.
That's pretty much how it was. I had an enormous head as a child, so it's not that far off.
I gotta do research on Daddy Longlegs when I get home. Everything
it
about
was
them
horrible. They can't. I don't even. They can't even bite you. They don't even have.
They can't do anything.
But just waking up to that as a kid, I just scared the living shit out of me.
They can lay eggs in you. Probably.
And so I have a big, I have a big like vengeance thing. I'll hunt spiders down. I'll just fucking
click, click, click.
I'm like the Punisher when it comes to spiders. I have to kill
you
them.
You have to kill them. Someone's got to.
I just walk around with a snake around my neck. God, just because in case
you're John Goodman in Arachnophobia.
Yeah. That movie. I couldn't even watch that movie. That was horrible. I hated bugs. Now I'm not. It's weird. When I was like, from the age of 6 to like 30, bugs freaked me out. It flew near me, anything. And then after 30, it was like they didn't bother me anymore. Now it's like.
That's how I was with werewolves.
Yeah, I can see that.
They bothered me until I was 30.
Until 30? Then it's no big deal.
It's not a big deal.
Why were they showing The Howling on like 2 o'clock on a Saturday when I was 8?
The thing is, if you don't get rid of those werewolves.
What the fuck?
See?
Parental advice? Yeah, you had bad parents letting you watch that shit when
you don't get rid of those werewolves, they really fuck up your foundation of your house. They burrow. You ever had a werewolf nest?
And they'll multiply. You'll
watch Tony's Twitter that there's a werewolf that has just dug up a hole, like a man-sized hole in the corner of his house. You look down, there's just a guy sitting down there.
I'm waiting for Burt Reynolds to show up in a fucking Firebird.
Hey, what's up? I heard you did a story about Chucko, yeah.
With the zombie of Dom DeLuise. Are we doing that for Halloween, Tom? Me as Captain Chaos and you as
I'll shave this down AJ? To a mustache and dye it a little darker.
I think that'd be sweet. I could pull off Captain Chaos.
I can pull off Burt Reynolds, sort of attitude-wise.
Absolutely.
Like, what's your deal?
Just you gotta get the laugh down. You gotta get that hokey laugh of his. That
I'm gonna have to watch it. I was going to watch the transmit of Smokey and the Bandit.
I, sir, will find you a white cowboy hat.
Oh no, it was a black cowboy hat.
It was a black cowboy hat.
Well, no, that's Smokey and the Bandit. I'm thinking in Cannonball Run. Was it white?
I think it was white in Cannonball
Run. Might have been white. Who could you be from Cannonball Run? You could be
Roger Moore.
Nice.
Yes.
No. Not tall enough. No. Not tall enough. Who could you be? I'm trying to think of who else was in.
That's our next Around Comics contest. What character can Chris play from Cannonball Run?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I tell you what.
Rest in peace, Mr. DeLuise.
Let's wrap up some business here. Let's make next episode more of an email, voicemail episode.
Sure.
Tom from Sweden. One more week, buddy. Sweden. One more week.
Oh, he gave us candy, though.
He sent us candy.
Oh, he sent us candy just so we'll read his email?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Let's read it. What are we cutting short for? What do we got to do?
All right.
I'm cracking it open.
If you would like to contact the show, you can do so by sending us an email at info@aroundcomics.com. It is Tom.
I don't have an email from him. You got it.
It's try and pronounce that. It's Stott. Do not eat on the show, Tom.
Oh, my God.
Tom Svelborg.
Svelborg.
Svelberg.
He's from Sweden. He is from Sweden. So,
Tomb. It's Tom, but TOMB. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. It's like short for tombstone or something. Tomb. It's Tomb Svelberg. The latest episode was great. Jeffrey Brown is awesome, and I will be sure to use him to give you guys something from Sweden.
Which he did.
Maybe a moose. Don't know yet. Anyway, I recently finished reading the first issue of Battle of the Cowl and fell in love. No, not with the issue. That felt like reading Marvel vs. DC number one, but I fell in love with Beryl Hutchinson, also known as the Squire. She must be the best-dressed DC character ever, so I went back and read some Batman issues with her in it, getting kidnapped alongside Robin, but I want more the Squire. Did I say the squirrel?
No.
I thought I said the squirrel.
No, you said the squire. I would have definitely laughed if you said the squirrel.
But I want more of the squire goodness. So please help me out there. Where can I read more about Beryl's adventures? I don't want to read about the other squires. Oh, geez, look at the time. I have a bus to catch. Well, at least I wasn't running outside. Or was that an iFanboy reference? Never mind. So until later, have a nice time answering the question and casting. Thanks, Tomb Svedelberg from
Sane. I have no idea who Squire is.
Squire, well, she's from the Black Glove.
The Black Glove storyline, yeah.
Storyline. I don't know that she existed before that.
She was the the
sidekick.
The British Robin, basically.
Yeah, she's, yeah.
Great costume. Great costume.
Oh, yeah, yeah, cool character. Yeah. I don't know that there is any other Squire. I think that was a character that Morrison created specifically for that storyline because it was all the... Knights of whatever the fuck.
The Knights of Batman.
Or no, the Taylor.
They're all the
League
the
of Heroes. League of Heroes.
The multinational
Batmans. Batmans. Yeah. And yeah, that was basically England's Britain.
And I agree with him. I would love to see her be a fairly regular character in DC.
Yeah,
I love the costume.
But unfortunately, Tom, I don't think she exists in any older stories. So I don't think you're going to get any like Silver Age
fan fiction,
Silver Age Squire stories as much as that character. But you know, that's a testament to Morrison to be able to write a character that feels like, you know, had been around for a long time.
Maybe
that,
you'll get more in the future.
Now we'll all be surprised when next week DC releases the Squire Showcase and we realize that there was...
That's like, been around for... Yeah, maybe. I don't think so.
I don't think so. Maybe one issue or something. This is based on an older...
Yeah, yeah. Some of
But
them,
I mean, there's no...
It may have been like one issue of something that,
but there's no fleshed out story.
Now what did Tom?
I'm saying Tomb
because that's too cool. Tomb Svelberg.
I'm gonna say Tomb.
I'm saying Tomb.
He sent us a bag of Got and Blandit salt candy.
I just had some. It is salt.
What does that mean? Like it's, God and
it's
and
it's salt candy. Here, let's. Sal, would you like? I don't think Tom.
What
wants
is
anymore.
Well, I want to see the package. What is salt candy?
I believe it's salt.
I don't know. Candy. Was it good?
It was different.
Oh, it's like a gummy bear kind of.
Yeah, but covered in salt.
It's black licorice. God, I wish I would have known that. I fucking hate black licorice. Wait, there's a red one in here. Wait,
yeah, it's like salty covered licorice.
Oh God. Okay, hand that to me with your other hand.
I'm sorry, it was horrible.
Yeah,
the red one's good. The
red one's pretty good.
The black one's horrible. That's disgusting.
We're all eating on air right now.
Put that off of my hand.
That red was pretty good.
Yeah, the red one's interesting.
It's like a steak.
It's a very salty gummy bear or like, Swedish fish.
It's like that.
How come he didn't send us Swedish fish? He's from Sweden. They don't have Swedish fish in Sweden?
Maybe they just
call them fish.
And it gets thank confusing. You, Tom.
Gotten Blandat salt.
Gotten Blandat.
I want to see, you know, like Dita doing a commercial for this. And the shapes are some red thing, a star, a shell, a triangle. Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, that's a pepper.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
A pepper? Oh.
And that's kind of what the flavor
spicy,
is.
Spicy,
a little spicy. How unconventional.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if this is his favorite candy from...
I don't know.
He was probably just like in a convenience store and said, what can I get these apples?
That's why we're selling this for 25 cents. There's no way in Sweden eats this.
This is clearance.
It's probably made out of like, you know...
It was like from the Swedish version of Big Lots.
It's the equivalent of Swedish candy hot dogs.
Interesting.
It's all the lips and assholes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
So he sent that back with Jeffrey? Jeffrey
Brown.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey, for bringing that back.
Yeah.
So Jeffrey was stopped in customs for his...
This is heroin-laced.
What is this Gotten Blandat salt candy?
May I taste it?
Nice. It tastes like peppers. Salty peppers.
So, once again, you can email us at info@aroundcomics.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-888-997-5903.
Do it.
You can listen to Tom on Tom versus the Flash
three times a week. Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Yeah,
you still need to start your group.
They're very nice to me.
You need to start your group over at
it's true.
At the aroundcomics.com.
He had a whole forum thread. He never posted once in it.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance at work. I just haven't.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
He doesn't want to share.
I'd like to thank everyone for leaving us.
I just want to hold it all to myself.
I'd like to thank everyone for leaving us
iTunes
music review.
I'm not done.
So let me get through the iTunes music reviews.
Jesus
Pulp Minded, Harry Trufant, Adam Age Alex, Smills Doe, G Spot and Jay Scarzi.
G Spot.
You guys are great. Thank you so much. So yes, you have an announcement.
Yeah, I guess I'm doing another podcast.
What?
Soon.
Are you really gonna do it?
Yeah, no, I'm really gonna do it. Okay. It's called. I'm just part of it. I'm.
What's it called?
It's called The League of Nobodies. And it is going to be a it's comic book related podcast. It's basically going to be a book club. We're going to do it every couple of weeks or whatever, where we just pick a trade or a graphic novel and read it and talk about it. And it's going to be me and Braxton Harrison, which is he's a longtime friend of the show. Matthew Burden, who's from England.
11 o'clock comics fans will know him as Templar.
As Templar, the funny voicemail guy, who the British guy.
I don't understand English humor.
He did the Jaws voicemail, which was awesome.
Whenever I hear someone with an English accent, I just think Benny Hill.
I love Benny Hill. And then some guy named Scotty Young is going to be on it too. It's actually Scotty's idea. He kind of put it together and asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. I said, yeah, why not? It's only a couple of, couple times a month, maybe. We should have our first episode out probably a couple days or a week, or I don't know when. Maybe a week after this airs, maybe later. It could be 3 months from now. Who knows?
Late May, are we June?
We're in
when
the...
When are you solicited to come out? Is this an
we're
advanced...
We're not soliciting.
Is this an advanced solicitation?
I don't know. It'll come out when it comes out. We're not putting any date on it. Who knows?
Do people have to pre-order?
No, it's free. It's a free podcast, but it's called League of Nobodies. There's a website, leagueofnobodies.com.
Don't pod fade before you start.
No. We're you know what? Honestly, we're not trying to make it into like a show or anything. We're just gonna talk about just a book that we read. It's not gonna be that big of a deal, but
whatever. Listen or not,
If you don't like it,
You guys are going to announce your first book on your first episode, or do you want to give people a little heads up on what they might want to start reading?
No, we'll announce it on the.
Okay,
yeah,
I know what it is, so I'm gonna start.
You know what it is?
It's good too.
Yeah, it's a good. It
was all
my choice.
It was almost going to be a book club selection here. So I have to.
I stole it from you.
Yes, you did.
But yeah, we're gonna do it. It's like I said. It's just gonna be us four talking about a particular trade, and that's pretty much it.
Nothing. Oh, cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
League of Nobodies. So check out the League of Nobodies.
Yeah, just chill out
and relax about it.
Yeah, whatever.
Take it easy.
Yeah,
take it easy,
whatever.
Tom.
What's your problem?
Whatever.
Why are you so my business?
just chill out, man.
What does that mean? Is that, you know what that means?
Up in my business. Yeah, up in your business.
Is that
get out of my grill?
I don't even know.
Yeah. You can you
get
can
away
listen.
From my grill.
You can get a little from bit more of me and occasionally Tom and Sal by listening to 11 o'clock comics.
Yeah,
and
I just left a voicemail on 11 o'clock
that's
comics.
Why giving me shit.
Yeah. I called you.
I deserve it.
I said something along. You were talking out of your ass. I think is
why
what I
do
said.
That every week.
Yeah,
I do that every week.
Chris is talking out of his ass. Click.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I actually leave that same voicemail every week. I'm hoping Vince will play it this time. We'll see. He says he plays everyone, but 36 and counting, Vince.
He's never played. I've been calling and reading chapters from Jim McMahon's biography.
And Vince should just be a podcast, man. That should just be its own podcast.
I've talked about it. I have a friend who wants me to do a private audiobook version for him where I simply
oh
read.
My.
He likes listening to me read McMahon because I really capture the spirit
of
Jim McMahon.
I'm sure you do.
They were right. We were outrageous. I got overserved, I get that. I can get this smarmy attitude.
The punky QB?
Yeah, down properly when I'm reading it.
You're like the punky podcast guy.
Got a bad shoulder,
how
too.
How you feeling now that, tax season's over and...
Feeling strong?
You feeling good?
You
feeling
look good.
Re-energized?
Look good.
Yeah, you look
I feel
healthy.
Good. I feel strong.
Getting the
better
wedding.
Than I've ever felt in my entire life.
Wow.
The best day I've ever had.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's all downhill.
That's awesome. The downward slide.
I peaked
right
today
now.
About an hour ago. Too bad we were doing the show when it happened.
Wedding plans going well?
It's going great.
Yeah.
Just nice. Getting the invitations printed up now.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's going to be a really great time.
Cool.
Very affordable. Lowest price consistent with quality.
Very good.
Miller High Life. I sense a Miller High Life wedding.
No, it's...
Smirnoff is a fine vodka. There's nothing wrong with serving that to your guests.
I'm going to get vodka that is like... it's cheap when it's like McCormick's. It's like an Irish vodka. And,
Smitty's.
Scott, at least, you know, yeah, yeah. Smitty. You know, like McGillicuddy's vodka.
McGillicuddy's Irish vodka.
Since when the Irish... Well, why is someone... Or the worst of all time is Siberian Ice. Is possibly the worst vodka. That's, it was like $6.99 for a bottle in college.
Hey, you know what? After three of them... After three of them, you won't even notice the difference.
There was a guy in college. Every Friday, we would go and stock up for the weekend partying. And we would drive through the drive-through liquor store in Southern Illinois. Nice. Called ABC Liquor.
I need one of those.
And it would be...
I wonder you're a fucking alcoholic.
We would like a case of Keystone Light and a liter and three quarters of your cheapest vodka.
Cheapest, please. You knew you really made
and
it in the world.
Two packs of smokes.
You guys knew you really made it in the world when you ordered the second cheapest.
Yes.
I'm going to move up to McCormick's.
McCormick's vodka.
McCormick's vodka.
And how you doing, Chris? Away. What's going on with you? Anything, you know? I know you're not getting married. And
no?
You're,
no,
not like, you're already
no.
married. Anything good?
Baseball team's in first place.
Tied for first place.
That's not really anything you had a
no.
you know, part of. What about your...
What about you? What have you done?
What have you done? What have you... What's going on with you? Not people you attach to.
Clean my car this week.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, looks good.
I'll give you that.
Very cool.
That's more than I am.
Yeah, yeah, shit. I
still got a three-legged dog.
My plants are all
dying.
That's
working out for me.
Very nice. Yeah. Very good. Okay. All right. I just wanted to catch up with you. That's all, you know.
You see me every day.
Yeah, but we just talk about comics. We don't talk about, you know, life and
hockey.
Stuff that matters.
When I hear Chris say, so I was talking to Sal at work about this, I imagine that you guys have two desks.
It's not that
are
far.
Facing the same direction. There's like 1 foot in between you, and what happens is Chris turns to you and goes, "You know what?" And then you just kind of like look down.
It's you know, not that far off from the truth, quite
just
honestly.
Just sit and face not. Both at
he,
the same
he
direction.
He sits with headphones on and nothing playing.
Avoiding the world
no.
with a Nintendo DS at the same
no,
time.
No, like, no, you guys are making me out to be some sort of...
So I love curmudgeon. I love our conversations at work. It helps me get through the day.
You know what? Right, you know what, Sal? And then it's like some Andy Rooney-esque, like,
you know Alan Moore's pretty good.
What do you think? It's like a Larry King thing, like,
Jesus. And then I tell him what I think about Alan Moore, and then a week later I hear it on 11 o'clock comics.
No, that's okay, all right.
But misquoted.
Now, listen
exactly,
here.
Exactly.
Now, your little drinking game of, I was talking to Sal at work today. I always say that because whenever I don't say that, Sal's like, you're ripping off my shit.
Well, that's yeah, not, but you still don't.
Guys, let's end this. This is...
Jesus. Yeah, I don't want to...
Let's
don't,
not
wear
our problems for everyone.
I understand. It's okay.
All right. We had mentioned iFanboy a little earlier ago. We kind of been giving them some good-natured ribbon, but...
A good old ribbon.
Just so it doesn't get, you know, out of hand.
I was planning on it. I was just waiting for fucking Flanagan to say something, another fucking thing. Just fucking start with me again, Flanagan.
You should have called him out.
Fucking crush your little bulldog's head.
I don't know. I'm just messing around.
George Clooney.
Is that really
his dog's name?
Yeah.
What is wrong with that guy?
He has a French bulldog named George Clooney. Oh,
and he's straight?
As far as we know.
He should have called him out on Fight Friday on Twitter.
Oh, come on. That's not a fight.
That's the only type of fighting I do.
That's like fighting a kid. Like, I just hold his head and he'd swing his arms in a windmill. That's not Fight Friday.
Fight.
Okay, let's wrap
it. That's fighting.
So
with comic book nerds? Come on.
You'd show up with your fucking American flag nunchucks.
Yeah, I would. Absolutely. I'm
how do you want to do this?
How you want to throw it down?
One of us is unconscious?
I actually like Josh a lot. He's a good guy.
That's why you feel comfortable threatening his dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, he wouldn't.
Well, I do fucking hate bulldogs, though.
Why?
They're just annoying. The whole breathing thing, and they seem like, to me, I think... Like, bulldogs are the mistake of the dog world. They're just sort of like a genetic failure of a dog. They don't really have any purpose.
I think pugs are more of that.
Well, pugs at least are kind of cute.
Yeah,
bulldogs aren't even cute. They're just ugly little face pushed in. They can't breathe.
Well, any dog.
They can't run. They're not work dogs.
I put bulldogs
above any
dog that you have to carry.
Well, I'll give you that. Yeah. If you got to carry it around in a purse, you know, that's not cool.
This is a French bulldog that we're talking about.
Well, yeah, because it's a little. That's the worst of the bulldogs, because that's like a purse dog, but you know, it's not cute. It's not. What the fuck does it do? What do you do with
Sal? What? I have a purse dog in my man purse.
Your merch.
Be careful of what
He's
you say.
He's got a merch dog.
What do you do with
it's a Labrador like pug. It's a lug.
Oh, nice.
It's a lug-a-doodle. Nice.
Lug-a-doodle. Wow. I'd like to know what Josh does with his dog all day. You know,
probably drives me crazy. Probably stares at him all the time. Probably does.
Does Ron or Connor have dogs? Do they have dogs? Because no. I don't hear them talk about no. dogs. I just
no.
wonder.
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah. No.
Can we just finish this episode?
Yeah. Jesus. All right. I thought we did. This is all.
Yeah. Oh. We're still going.
Jesus all right. Christ. I all these.
Everyone,
sorry, Josh. I didn't mean to badmouth.
Your dog.
French bulldogs are cool, man. No, really. They're tough.
All right. That's all right. Dog. Go home. Hug your dogs, French bulldog or not. And
I bet it's a great guard dog. I bet.
Enjoy.
It scares the shit out of people.
Enjoy the rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next week.
How many French bulldogs would it take to latch to a sled to pull like an average 8-year-old? Like three? You think three or four French bulldogs could pull?
300 or 400.
Yeah,
that's a lot of French bulldogs.
Man,
all right, we'll be back again next week. In the meantime,
French bulldogs are like
it's your wine.
As what?
It's your wine.
He said he already what? Said his thing.
That's oh, around?
No.
What am I saying? What?
What? Are you all right?
What the hell is he talking about?
In between time.
Oh, in between time.
You say sabotage.
We'll be everywhere he ends.
And around comics. French bulldog. God. French.
Talk about a stumble like, to the finish line.
Yeah, just wind him up.
Do you think French bulldogs like surrender whenever a burglar comes to the house? You know, just sort
it's
of
a German
puts
bulldog.
His hand and puts a white flag up. And
it's a German bulldog shows up.
German bulldog shows up and German Shepherd shows up.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2009.
Wow. I can't help it. What was going on, you know, his dog specifically.